This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome, my friends. Hour number three begins of the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. It is 8:07. Your time check brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. Happy Hump Day, Trump Day. It's also Ash Wednesday as well. The big show, the fireworks, the fun, frivolity. It was all last night when President Trump addressed a joint meeting of Congress. And joining us right now, Congresswoman Kat Kamick. Good morning, Kat. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. I'm a little groggy. We were up till about 1 in the morning. But what a night.
Yeah, let's start. Al Green got tossed out. And anybody wanted to, people were asking, did you hear him say anything?
Yeah, bless his heart. You know, he's kind of known for these types of theatrics, you know, and I've always kind of laughed a little bit because he's always talking about, you know, the Democrats are the party of the future and nothing screams future like a 78-year-old man shaking a cane at you. But he was all about, you know, resist, and I think he said something about slavery and called the president a liar and... you know, that area where he was at, and the chamber is actually quite small, so we could all hear it, but that whole area was mic'd up, and the speaker had originally even told us, he's like, listen, if they stand up, we're gonna cut those mics where they're at, because we're not going to give them the time of day. We're not going to give them the platform to steal the president's thunder. This is about America. This is about really turning the page, and we're not going to deal with that nonsense. And so a lot of people really couldn't hear it, but I mean, it was the same typical Democrat nonsense.
Well, yeah, and I think the outcome was appropriate. He got tossed. Hey, the Democrats didn't react to, if I'm counting right, they didn't react positively to anything except maybe aid to Ukraine, but save for that, even things that had nothing to do with politics, right?
Yeah, this was shocking to me. I was actually just telling a reporter very, very early this morning how, this being my fifth State of the Union, I remember whenever President Biden would say something that was pro-police or pro-America or something that, you know, we believed in, we would stand and we would clap. Mm-hmm. I remember getting hate mail for having stood up and clapped when he talked about supporting firefighters. And of course, you guys know, mm-hmm. married to a firefighter. So of course, I'm going to stand up and clap for our first responders, you know, as any normal red-blooded American would.
Right.
But last night, they refused to stand for anything. They couldn't stand for a 13-year-old kid battling brain cancer. They couldn't stand for the parents of Lake and Riley and Jocelyn, two women who, well, one a girl, a 12-year-old girl, and one a young woman who were brutalized sexually and then horribly murdered by illegals. They couldn't stand for their families. They couldn't stand for the announcement that we captured the terrorist mastermind behind the Abbey Gate disaster. They couldn't stand for a single freaking thing, and I was in the room, and we kept tracking it, like, nope, didn't stand for that. How sick do you have to be? But honestly, I really, it dawned on me very late last night, they will stand for nothing. They have subscribed to the identity crisis, the identity politics of the last couple decades, so much so that they have lost their identity entirely. This is a moment where they've got a lot of soul searching to do, because the American people watched this and said, they can't even come to stand for a kid with brain cancer. What is wrong with these people?
Yeah. And what about some of them? They were wearing pink. I thought, was that, are they trying to claim they're for women's rights, but not a single one would vote to support the ban on biological males playing in women's sports? What's the pink mean?
I'm not sure. I think there was a lot of confusion amongst the Democrats yesterday. I actually talked to a few of them. The women had said they were doing pink for women, but of course, when I asked, well, why don't you vote for women, you know, protecting women's mm-hmm. spaces in sports, they're immediately silent. Then there was a group that said they were going to bring empty egg cartons and clackers. And I asked one of my Democrat colleagues in the hallway yesterday, I said, well, I don't remember you bringing egg cartons when we had historic inflation on our groceries under Biden.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have a response. And then there was the group that wanted to do the paddles, which social media is absolutely roasting these people. Never hold up a blank sign or a paddle. Social media and the internet will absolutely destroy you. That's 101. And the funny part is they said, we're going to stand up and we're going to walk out and that's going to be our resistance. No one cared. No one cared. We are so over the theatrical outrage, entertainment, politics. We want stuff done. And they just want to be a pick-me-girl type energy person in the room of, look at me, look at how hard I'm fighting. But in reality, they're doing nothing. Well, and I got to say, and I did see, and I was in an elevator on my way to vote yesterday, and they had a big box of Ukrainian flag ties that they were handing out. They couldn't even decide amongst themselves what they were going to be apparently for. So you got pink suits and yellow and blue ties and black shirts, and it was just, they were deeply confused.
Well, don't tell them about a new poll that came out, CBS News poll, an astounding 76% of Americans viewing the speech approved of Trump's remarks. And when they broke it down, only 51% of the viewers identified as Republicans. So clearly, Trump has struck a nerve with mainstream America, and the Democrats still don't quite grasp or understand that. And I guess we should just let them continue to wallow in their ignorance, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's because the policies that we are championing, the work that we are doing, and what the president said, it transcends party politics.
Mm-hmm.
There are no boxes to check. Again, you know, we are no longer doing the identity politics of you get to do something based on whatever box you decide you want to check that day. No. He even said, we're returning to a meritocracy. This is something that I know everyone, regardless if you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, no matter what, if you work hard, you want to be recognized for your effort, not because you happen to check a box. And the era of the participation trophy, it's over. But they are going to hold on to this for dear life. I mean, they're really tripling down on it. And it's going to be to their own peril. And to hear them last night as we were doing interviews in Media Row, just some of the comments, I'm like, man, they're stuck in an era of 10, 12, 13, 15 years ago. They really are in the midst of an identity crisis. They don't know what they stand for, quite literally.
Hey, no pressure, but March 14th is coming soon, so I'm going to use the B word on you. Budget, where are we at? Can it get done?
You know, I have a real problem personally with continuing resolutions. I have an even bigger problem if you put earmarks on it. As you guys know, I'm the only Republican congressman in the delegation in Florida that does not do earmarks. So if you put earmarks on a continuing resolution, I have a problem with that. I have an even bigger problem with the fact that this is a continuing resolution that is Nancy Pelosi's policies from 4 years ago. on top of that, to add insult to injury, you want to keep all of the same programs and spending levels that Elon and Doge has gone through and uncovered as incredibly wasteful. I have serious problems with this plan.
Well, real quick, what happened to the budget that you all passed and sent it to the Senate?
So that is actually for the reconciliation bill. So the reconciliation budget resolution is entirely separate from a CR to keep the government going and funded for the remaining fiscal year 25. Two separate things.
Wow, you got your hands full. We always appreciate your time. We know you're on limited sleep. And thanks, Congresswoman Kat Kamick, again, for your time this morning. And keep fighting the good fight.
Appreciate you guys. Go Gators.
Right on. Yep. Think of positive things. Go
yeah.
Gators.
Yeah.
Basketball, baseball, softball.
Gotta love it.
The good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Indeed. All right, we've got a lot more to talk about on The Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. Don't forget, The Bob Rose Show podcast is available wherever you normally download your podcast, or you can use the Audacy app, Audacy. Click on subscribe, and you'll never miss a minute of the show. Coming up at approximately 8:30, 8:35, we're going to talk to Florida Ag Commissioner Wilton Simpson. So stick around for that. 97.3 The Sky. Yeah. What about the women in there that were Democrats wearing pink? Were they defending women? Were they protecting women? All the hard-fought rights that women have, Title IX and sports, and now a biological male can compete? And Democrats stand by and allow that to occur and even defend it? Ridiculous. Thank you, Mr. President, for fixing that. The Democrats showed their true colors in another in that area, along with others, but in that one, not a single vote voting to protect women, where you'd only have women playing in women's sports. Things that we would think are logical and common sense based seem to escape the brain power of the Democrat lawmakers. Okay, well, let them keep wandering in that vast wasteland of idiocracy, right? Okay. Good morning and welcome. It is 8:23. It's the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here as well. And yes, I almost stepped on the president, which I would never do, especially on a happy hump day, Trump Day. But the 27th annual Bob Rose Golf Scramble, Friday, April 4th, is sold out. Got all the golfers. It's going to be great. We didn't oversell it. We always cut it off at like 100, so you're not going to be waiting long amounts of time. We want you to enjoy the experience, especially since it goes to such a great cause, helping the developmentally disabled through the ARC of Alachua County. Proud to be associated with them. But we could use some volunteers. So if you want to enjoy a Friday afternoon on April 4th out at the beautiful Hawkstone Golf and Country Club, we would love to have you. Please get in touch with the ARC's Mark Johnson, and you can do that at 352-246-3516. Last night, the president, I thought he was on fire. It was a long speech, but it went by very quickly. It's amazing how quickly it moved, how many positive things are happening, are in the works under President Trump in such a short period of time. It's not hyperbole when he says, look, we've already accomplished more than many presidencies do in 4 years. I'd have to say I believe that to be true. And one of the things that this White House is doing is protecting the American people by launching the largest criminal illegal immigrant deportation operation in American history. Despite no help, no support from Democrat politicians, despite sanctuary cities getting in the way. I'm going to give you a few examples. Okay. Do we have a cut on that? Borders, number mm-hmm. seven. Sorry. No doubt about it. And I'm going to go through a very, very partial list, but these are just some of the bad guys. A Portuguese national convicted of sexual exploitation of a minor, child pornography, apprehended in Philadelphia. Guatemala national charged with armed home invasion, kidnapping, intimidation, assault with a dangerous weapon, apprehended in Rhode Island. A Haitian national charged with three murders, apprehended North Carolina. A Salvadoran national and MS-13 gang member convicted of aggravated assault with bodily injury and DWI, apprehended in Houston. A Brazilian national and confirmed gang member convicted of assault and battery, apprehended in Boston. Honduran national convicted of criminal sexual conduct with a minor, apprehended in Minnesota. I can you see a pattern there? There's many, many more.
I thought the left told us that the president was like chasing down, you know, honest Mexican families and their children. Now, I didn't see any of them on that list that you just read.
Right, because that's not true. The Democrats really don't have anything that they can run on. I mean, really, their policies and philosophies, you know, I hate to overuse it, but really are anti-American or American second or third or whatever, putting everything else in front of them. I mean, the open border thing, well, again, we're in a much, much better place, heading for a much, much safer place under President Trump. And he's also putting American workers first. Yep, he's standing up for American workers, strengthening our industries, making it clear to the world that America is no longer going to be ripped off. Yep. And that's why the president's working with tariffs. And this move has been praised by the Steel Manufacturers Aluminum Association, businesses across the country. And already good things are happening. You've got countries that are willing to work with us, apparently. Yeah. According to the Commerce Secretary, you've had some reaching out from those in charge in Mexico and Canada. And there's going to be some positive movement, I believe, on the tariffs. And you'll probably find out as early as today. These are good things that are happening. The Democrats are not enjoying it, clearly. I don't feel that bad about it, though.
We'll get over it, right.
Florida Ag Commissioner Wilton Simpson joins us next. A 97.3, The Sky. Good morning. It's 8:33. It's the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. It's a happy Hump Day, Trump Day. More from the fantastic Trump speech that you may or may not have heard last night. That's okay, because we've got you covered. But first, we're going to cover our bases with our Florida Ag Commissioner, Wilton Simpson. Good morning, Commish. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Good morning.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. And the Florida legislature they opened the session Tuesday, and you've already got cabinet meeting setting up. So can you give us sort of a run through what would a typical cabinet meeting go like, and what would be some of the things discussed?
Sure. No. So right, we had opening day yesterday and the ceremonies and getting things kicked off, which was great. And then, so cabinet meeting today is going to be about, we have a lot of rural and family land projects. We have DEP bringing in some of their Florida Forever priority list to approve those purchases. And then a lot of what I would call just bureaucratic government things that has to be done. And I'll give you some examples. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to name our chair for our immigration council. We had the emergency cabinet meeting a few weeks ago. We're going to name the chair of that committee. We're going to put a new coordinator in for our clemency board. And then we're going to talk about bond refinance for the state and things like that. Those are the normal processes of a cabinet meeting that we have to approve to keep the state functioning and moving forward, whether it's bond purchases or repayment of debt or purchasing our easements and right-of-ways or allowing aquaculture leases to exist. So that's today. And then tomorrow we have clemency. So we'll have a people that we will be considering, obviously giving them clemency for, things that they had done in most cases in their youth. And so that'll be tomorrow, and that'll be a full week of activities.
Wow. I thought we were talking about oranges, but those are called clementine, aren't they?
There's our Clementine.
So close,
not
Bob.
To be confused with.
Hey, is it true there are 19 divisions actually under you as the Florida Ag Commissioner?
There are. There are 19 divisions, about 4,000 employees. We have, I've been on the job now 2 years as the Commissioner of Agriculture, and we have completely revamped our system. When we got here, there was about 15% vacancy rates. Now we're down below 6. You know, we've made a lot of improvements. You know, we were Doge before Doge was popular. My first year, we eliminated, I believe, 111 positions. And what we did was we took the money that was saved there, was about $6.5 million, and we plowed that back into our supporting the rest of our troops. And by doing that, we have a lot less turnover now. And so we have a lot more consistency and a lot more efficiency. But yeah, we're very proud of the not only efficiencies we've made here at the department, but also the way that each of those divisions are running their specific area. So we're very proud of that.
Do you think the governor's going to call for more cutting and more efficiency?
I know on the overall state government he is. In the world that we live in with our law and ag law enforcement, to give you an example, during special session on the immigration issues, we have an additional 84 law enforcement officers. So I think when we think about efficiencies, we do not think of them in terms of law enforcement and critical state concerns, I think. And by the way, we are trying to be more efficient there also. But clearly with population growth, it requires more law enforcement, more technology and things of that nature to track the criminal element in the state. But yes, we're always looking for efficiencies. And I'll give you an example in the Department of Agriculture, which obviously is my area of the world. We're going to be the first state agency in the country, according to Microsoft, to completely have revamped its software. We should get that project finished by the end of next year. And since I've started 2 years ago, we will have completely revamped our software, which is much more user-friendly to interface with the public. All of my divisions internally can talk to each other and look at each other's work. It brings an amazing efficiency to the process. Through that efficiency, we will continue to have the need for less and less employees. The efficiency of bringing technology to the forefront and making sure that things are user-friendly. And so over time, my department would probably, over the next 3 or 4 years, probably be down another 5 to 8% of the population, you know, the headcount. And it'll be based on people retiring and doing things of that nature. But it's we always are looking for ways to make things efficient. The governor, of course, is looking at a statewide picture. Generally, I'm looking, obviously, at just my Department of Agriculture. And again, we have about 4,000 employees here. So we're always looking to have better encounters with the public and make sure that we're doing it in an efficient manner.
How much re-education will be required for your staff members to be able to use the new software?
It's ongoing. So what happens is as we are building these processes, our teams are part of the building of the specialized software that we have to do. So we have already got, and I'm going to guess, 4 or 5 divisions that are completely on this software, and we'll have another 8 or 10 in the next 6 months, and then the last ones will be, you know, hopefully by the end of the year, or the first of the following year, we'll have them all on there. But there's a lot of training. But the reality is that it's so much more simple to use and user-friendly that the initial, you know, oh, my goodness, I've got a new, you know, technology I've got to learn, dissipates very quickly. Within just weeks, our teams are very excited. And by the way, when I got here, no one was excited. No one wanted to do this. Of course, no one wants to have change, right?
Right.
But the only way we can become more efficient, the only way we can wring out costs, and in not always just ringing out calls, but delivery. If you are looking for a license today, we have about a 99.9% delivery rate within just a few days. And so that is the customer experience for the Department of Agriculture has greatly improved in the last 2 years. And we're very proud of that. And that's from our hardworking, you know, employees here. And it's also from giving them the tools they need to do their job. And I think that's the biggest thing. A lot of times state employees get accused of being lazy or not doing a good job. And that's not true. In most cases, it's because they do not have the tools to do their job with. And so I'm about getting the tools and the technology they need to do their job with efficiently. And once you do that, then you can hold people accountable. But if you do not give them the tools to do the job with, you know, then it's hard to hold people responsible for a quality that would be demanded by our public.
Hey, let me ask you about eggs. You're probably tired of talking about it, but I guess two questions. Are we still destroying some chickens, some birds? And what's kind of the lag time? When can we expect to see prices maybe level out and drop a little bit or get back to some sense of normalcy in that industry?
Right. Well, no, that's always a good question. And so because egg farmers are, you know, despise the notion that the egg prices are so high also. Egg farmers do not want these high prices. We want to be able to supply our customers with a product and make sure that they're getting a quality and value and product. And so when you think about, this has been the worst avian flu outbreak we've ever had in the history, but it normally takes about 12 months to bring that price back down. And it will steadily, I believe, decline because we have not had seen outbreaks in the last few weeks. So as we do not have outbreaks and as summer comes, you'll have fewer and fewer. And President Trump administration the other day said, I think they're going to put $500 million towards biosecurity and making sure that egg farmers around the country are make sure they have the right biosecurity and things of that nature. We've been blessed in Florida. The avian flu is in Florida, but we have not had any commercial flocks to this point break with the avian flu. So we've got a great biosecurity system in Florida. And to support that, if you Google this, about 6 months ago in the state of Texas, there was a dairy farm that broke out with AI also. And, you know, I immediately issued an executive order saying we will not take those lactating cows into this state and you have to test those cows coming in. The federal government took about 6 or 7 weeks to issue that same order. And now there are about 8 states with dairy cows with the avian flu also, which means it's going to be there longer. Birds can go from the dairy farm to the chicken farm or any other bird farm and continue this process. So I know that the federal government's working from a global perspective, but the state of Florida, working with our egg producers here in the state of Florida, have got a great program, and we're, you know, hope's never a strategy. I think we've got a great program. Hopefully we won't see any outbreaks of the avian flu in Florida. But until nationally it gets under control, it's not going to get back to normal. But I would think a year from now, egg prices will be substantially lower. And if we're successful nationwide, in 2 years from now, eggs will be very cheap again. I mean, they may be back down to $1.50 a dozen or something.
Oh wow!
Which, by the way, is below below the cost of producing them. But anytime you see a price spike like this, overproduction will happen in the next few years, and that's been the typical trend. The avian flu this time has done much worse than has ever done in the history of the country, and that's why you see the crisis you see today.
And we're not going to let any Chinese companies come in and buy part of that industry, are we?
In the state of Florida, we actually banned
right.
Our foreign enemies from doing that. I think President Trump issued an executive order on this, but he may. But we need our Congress. What we need our Congress people to get off of Fox News and go do their jobs. And they could pass a bill tomorrow that says our foreign enemies cannot buy agriculture land in the United States and to be countrywide. And we look after the state of Florida, obviously, in our roles here. And they cannot do that in the state of Florida.
Right. I remember us talking about that. Florida Ag Commissioner Wilton Simpson, always a pleasure. Can't wait to talk to you again. And good luck with all those cabinet meetings. Don't get a headache.
Thank you. Thanks, Bob.
All right. Sorry. 8:45 on the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. We got plenty more to talk about via the president's speech last night. He really covered the gamut. I think it was the longest speech in the history of presidential speeches in the world, going back to before pre-Roman times.
Pretty much, yeah. Yep.
But it was still an awesome one.
Yes,
and
was.
We'll share details of that with you coming up next on 97.3 The Sky.
A major focus of our fight to defeat inflation is rapidly reducing the cost of energy. The previous administration cut the number of new oil and gas leases by 95%, slowed pipeline construction to a halt, and closed more than 100 power plants. We are opening up many of those power plants right now. And frankly, we have never seen anything like it. That's why on my first day in office, I declared a national energy emergency.
Yeah.
As you've heard me say many times, we have more liquid gold under our feet than any nation on earth, and by far. And now I fully authorize the most talented team ever assembled to go and get it. It's called Drill Baby,
Baby
Drill.
Drill. Greg's already adding cylinders to his vehicle as we talk about it.
Yeah, I'm going to see if maybe Rick or one of those guys in the Jeep Club can help me drop a 392 in mine, too.
A 392?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Oh, maybe you should hear that thing.
I bet you could probably climb some hills.
Oh, man. You just tear the hills down with that thing.
Yeah. Yeah, just put a little front end on it, a little front end grader or whatever.
Yeah.
Hey, good stuff. Let me tell you something. It's not just about cheap gas. It really, from a geopolitical standpoint, it is huge when we produce an excess amount of energy. It forces the world prices to drop. And who gets hurt the most by that? Russia does. Russia gets hurt. What happens when they get hurt? Guess what? Their war machine is not going to run very well. And they're going to see how much it's costing them and how little money they have coming in. And it will make a difference. And that strategy has been utilized before effectively. I want to believe, I think it was maybe under Reagan where we had an impact there. So if Trump's going to do it again. It worked. Why not? And, the side benefit or direct benefit, depending on how you're looking at it, is cheaper gasoline prices for Americans who need to go to work. And while he keeps adding things like manufacturing jobs, there's going to be a work to go to for Americans. So these are good things that are happening. Unfortunately, the Democrats didn't share any enthusiasm whatsoever for a single thing the president said. He even said, there's nothing I can say. I could cure a debilitating disease in I wouldn't be able to make the Democrats happy.
It is so sad but true.
Yeah. And, I mean, things that totally are non-political.
Yeah.
Let me give you an example. President Trump honored DJ Daniel. This kid is a 13-year-old cancer survivor. I believe, in 2018 he was diagnosed with brain cancer. Doctors gave him 5 months at most.
Ugh.
To live.
Wow.
Yeah. And here we are more than 6 years later. Since that time, DJ and his dad have been on a quest to make his dream come true. His dream to become a police officer. Is that not awesome?
That is.
So first of all, you've got a kid, which, by the way, doesn't matter to me, but to Democrats, because all they care about is color of skin. This is a young black kid. Okay. He's got a police uniform on. They're holding him up. He's getting applause. He's getting applause from everybody except the Democrats. The Democrats won't cheer on a young African-American boy who wants to be a police officer who is beating what was supposed to be terminal cancer. And you can't applaud that? That is, what do you call that? Sick? Yeah. And tonight, DJ said, another DJ, Donald J, said, we're going to do you the biggest honor. I'm asking our new Secret Service Director, Sean Curran, to officially make you an agent of the United States.
Aww.
And right away, Chance, DJ, start erupting. But again, if you looked around, when the camera panned, the Democrats were sitting on their hands. They looked absurd. How could you not cheer a moment like that? And there were other ones. There were other moments. You've got the renaming of a national wildlife refuge. It's now going to be the Jocelyn Nungary National Refuge.
Alexis, moments ago, I formally renamed that refuge in loving memory of your beautiful daughter, Jocelyn. So, Mr. Vice President, if you would, may I have the order?
Now, the background on Jocelyn, she was brutally murdered in Houston, Texas, and two Venezuelan illegal aliens, both reputedly part of the gang, Tren de Aragua, have been charged with this heinous crime. These two men were caught near the border in early 2024, were released into the United States due to the Biden administration immigration policies. Only weeks later, they are alleged to have ended Jocelyn's life in a senseless act of violence. So the National Refuge will bear her name as a lasting tribute, and apparently she had this passion and love of animals. And so this is a wonderful thing. Did the Democrats cheer for that? Pull on anybody who has a heart, their heartstrings? No. No, and apparently they didn't react at all when the name Laken Riley was brought up, who was another victim of an illegal immigrant. At one point in 2024, illegal aliens made up 75% of arrests in Midtown Manhattan for crimes like assault, robbery, and domestic violence. So I guess that kind of ruins those stats that they collected 40 years ago that said, immigrants don't commit crimes at a rate higher than the typical American. In fact, it's lower. Yeah, 40 years ago it was. These aren't the same folks.
No.
Not by a long shot. The 9 o'clock stretch is coming up next. You're listening to 97.3 The Sky.